grab some popcorn and a favorite chair. The love of movies is why we're here. Press play and don't delay. Let Phil be our guide to a cinematic day. Phil at the movies, through the silver screen to his podcast stream. Phil's covering every movie dream. Phil at the movies. Phil at the movies.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Phil at the Movies. I am, of course, your host, Phil Walsh, and you are listening to show number 180 of this ongoing podcast that is, you guessed it, For the Love of Movies. And after last week's show of Jaws 3, or Jaws 3D, as it was originally called, what better way to end the summer with talking about the first summer blockbuster? And of course, Jaws is that movie. And not only is it the seminal summer blockbuster, this year it turns 50 years old. Yes, Jaws is now 50 years old. We have been dealing with that shark for 50 years, and God willing, 50 more. And frankly, based on the box office results from last weekend, a 50-year-old movie was number two at the box office, made $10 million. I think it was actually close to 11 when it was all said and done, which is not bad, not bad. It puts it up there as one of the big re-releases of the last few years. So not surprised, again, when we're talking about Jaws. But I am not alone today. I am delighted to be welcoming to the show first-time guest Nick from the Nickflix podcast. Nick, how are you today? Welcome to the show.
Phil, so good to be doing this again with you, buddy. I'm excited for this one.
Well, I know just from our discussions that you are a little bit of a Jaws fan.
Yeah, so a little bit. Just to give your listeners an idea. So me and Mrs. Podcast, we went to Martha's Vineyard and met up with, I'm going to give a plug to their podcast because they're great people. Sarah and MJ, who host Let's Jaws for a Minute. Again, two people who are kind of Jaws fans. they did a whole podcast dedicated to breaking down that movie minute by minute, and got to meet them in Martha's Vineyard to celebrate the 50th on the actual day, June 20th, was the official like 50-year mark release date, and got to go. I met so many cool people there. I stood within like 3 feet of Richard Dreyfuss. Wow. Got to meet the actor who plays Alex Kittner. Got to meet Roy Scheider, or not Roy Scheider, Robert Shaw's nephew, who wrote a book about him.
Oh, wow.
And his wife, who were like the nicest people. And the wife gave me this poster that they had copies of that was made for the people and the families of like the cast and crew. And I just ran into them at this like meet and greet thing. Didn't know who they were at first. And I just told her I saw this poster she was holding. I'm like, that's a really awesome poster. She goes, oh, you like it? Yeah, you could have it. And like told me the backstory of it. She goes, yeah, we brought some copies down that we had, but she goes, they were giving us like 40 copies. I'm like, that's awesome. I would have paid 30, 40 bucks for this poster. So like that it worked out. But yeah, it's a movie that, like you said, just talk about the box office. And like, I saw this, I was lucky enough. I didn't get to go this past weekend, but I did see it 2 years ago in IMAX when it first did like an IMAX re-release. And it's just an incredible movie that everyone should see. I feel like there's a bucket list of movies everybody should see on the big screen. This is easily top on that list.
Oh, I co-sign that across the board. I've seen Jaws, I think at this point, I think 6 or 7 times on the big screen at various points over the years. Mm-hmm. And it's a movie I never get sick of seeing. It was big growing up in my household. I mean, you know, go around a family dinner or vacation, we were always quoting, you know, some line from Jaws or somehow managing it to, you know, parrot it back, you know. I mean, especially, you know, as me and my sisters got older, you know, drink to your leg was always a popular phrase. But no, I mean, I'm envious of you. You went to the 50th. I really wanted to go to that this year, but just scheduling and family commitments were just, it was not an option. But that's really awesome that you got to go to that.
Yeah, it was one of those once in a lifetime. Got a cool T-shirt that was like the original Jaws cast shirt, and it just says Jaws, and it's just an outline of the shark's mouth.
Oh yeah.
But it was like the pictures of it. You see Spielberg. It's like the first piece of merchandise they made.
Yeah.
And Martha's Vineyard, smartly enough, was like, the town was like, okay, if you're going to sell these, it has to say Martha's Vineyard on there. But for the 50th, they allowed the shops to buy ones that didn't say it. So it was an actual like, hey, this was the shirt they wore, you know.
During the
One of the guy who runs one of the shops that I met, and he was just the nicest man. He's in the movie as an extra, as a kid during, you know, obviously in the 70s. But his brother is the actor who played Michael, Roy Scheider's oldest son.
Okay.
So sadly, he did die in his 30s. He had like a massive heart attack when he was hunting. And so what's cool is his brother is like dedicated these shops kind of to him and to keep the memory alive of like, hey, this is, you know, it's just this great, like, it's a tragic thing that happened, but like he keeps the memory of that movie. And you see what this movie meant to a lot of these locals who got to be extras in it, or, you know, like Martha's Vineyard now, since Jaws, it was known as like this hoity-toity place. And then like Jaws came out. Now it's like, it's a tourist place for people to go and like, oh my God, like there's the Jaws Bridge. I stepped on the rocks that Roy Scheider runs on when they're like, oh my God, the shark's in the pond, you know, and he knows Michael's in there. Like there's these little moments that you get to experience going to it where it's like, oh my God, I couldn't imagine living here. And I'm sure for people living there, they're like, eh, just a normal spot. But like you could tell they like a lot of these people really appreciated like that this movie 50 years later is still, you know, as relevant now as it was in 75 when it came out.
Well, as an aside, I have jumped off the Jaws Bridge a couple
times. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. I've been to Martha's Vineyard more times than I can count at this point. but it's interesting that you say that about the affinity that the island or the islanders have for the movie. Because that was not something that was apparent or really evident for the first couple of years. Not that they distanced themselves from the movie, but there's definitely been a change for the better, probably within the last maybe 10 or 20 years, where I think they really have embraced it as this part of the island's history and heritage, which, I mean, it's just such a cool thing. Like, I mean, I would love to be able to say, like, you know, in my town, X, yeah, Y, and Z movie shot there, you know? I think that's just such a cool little fact.
Well, and like, I didn't grow up in the city of Chicago. I grew up on the like a suburb right on the outskirts, and then moved to like a further suburb. But I did live in the city for 10 years as well. But like they've shot so many movies in Chicago, which is awesome. But this is like, this is the one movie, you know, that it's not like it's New York or LA or Chicago where you're like, oh yeah, they've shot thousands, maybe millions of movies there. And instead it's like, this is so unique to this town. And it's like a movie that, like, I hope that 50 years from now on the 100th release, that it still has this type of reverence. Cause almost everyone who worked on the movie is almost dead. That's the point we're reaching now on a movie like this, where in 10 years from now, there might be no one left alive who was like a key contributor to this movie, you know, not someone who was maybe like a kid extra, you know, cause they had a lot of those. But it's a very bittersweet feeling, because it's like, well, you know, especially I think about it with Spielberg all the time. The older he gets, I'm just like, that's going to be one. It's, you know, I don't like talking about it that way, but it's like, it also is like, you just know, you're like him, Scorsese, you're like, God, they're getting to that age where you just don't know which one of these movies is their last.
Yeah.
And it just gets to that like sad of like, they've given us so much. So it's so great to see a movie that was such heartache for Spielberg when he made it, because of how hard it was to like that documentary they did, the Jaws 50th, and to let him actually finally get to experience it and enjoy it and not let it be like this burden on him of like, cause of just how tough it was to do. So it's great to see even him kind of come around to like, yeah, no, this is great. And it's great that like people love it the way they do.
Oh no. I mean, I think it was Quentin Tarantino, either a year ago or within the last 5 years, said of Jaws, it is the quintessential, and I'm paraphrasing, but quintessential perfect movie. Mm-hmm. And I think that is without question. I mean, are there detractors for this movie? I'm sure there are. I've never met anybody who makes it their mission in life to hate Jaws. Like, I mean, I've never come across anybody who either is like mixed on the movie or just doesn't like it. Like, even the harshest, most hardened cynic is like, yeah, this is a pretty damn good movie.
Yeah, no, it's on that list of like perfect movies. Like, I think of this, Back to the Future.
Yeah,
you know, I think like the first Star Wars and even Empire Strikes Back, like these, the Raiders of the Lost Ark, there's just movies. Not that they all had to be from the 70s and 80s, but it just happened of like that, like, there's just these movies that stick with you where you're like, it's just perfect. There's,
right,
you know, and this is one of those movies. And it's just one where I think every time I watch it, and I had for most of my life growing up, Goodfellas was always my like absolute favorite. And mm-hmm. Jaws was like, okay, Jaws in my top five. And then like every year I'd be like, you know, it's probably like my top three. And then it's like, okay, it's basically tied for my first. But I do think like, I was just talking to my wife about it, and I'm like, I think Jaws, I think I've like, that's now my, like, if you told me like gun to the head, you had to pick one movie and that's it, like, I think I would pick Jaws. Like, that's the one that I think like, as I've just grown to appreciate it more and more, there's just so many things in this movie I think people don't catch until they've really sat down to like really analyze and watch it. And like, there's so much beautiful nuance in this movie that doesn't get talked about except for by us sycophants. But then like, but then you'll get someone who watched it for the first time and is like, oh man, like I didn't remember this part. And you're like, yeah, it's awesome, isn't it? Like, these little moments are great. And that's what makes this movie so relevant 50 years later, is I think a lot of the small stuff in the movie.
Well, that's the thing. Unlike, I'll just pick on shark movies because it's relevant. Every film that has followed Jaws tries to imitate it by just, all right, we have a shark and we'll up the body count. And sure, it's like with a slasher movie, you know, body counts and gore are part of the deal. But that's not what Jaws was about. It's not what I think makes Jaws altogether memorable. It's the character stuff. It's the dynamic between Brody Hooper and Quint. It's the funny moments. It's the banter with the townsfolks, some of the lines by Larry Vaughn. I mean, just like it's so much more than a shark movie, and I think that's what all of the imitators have missed. It's not just about the shark. I mean, the shark is barely in the film. We're talking, you know, maybe 5 minutes of screen time at best in a 2 hour film. Like,
yeah. Like, if you're actually talking about when you, like, actually seeing the shark, it's really about that much. Because they're always quick. You don't, it doesn't linger on the shark much. Yeah, it's really, like you said, I think it's, like, there's a place in movies for, like, a Deep Blue Sea. That's a fun shark movie. But you probably couldn't name, really, the characters in it. It's, I just know it was LL Cool J and Sam Jackson, and you're like, it's a fun movie, and it's perfectly fine. But like, I think why Jaws is what it is, like you said, it's the characters, it's the like moments to let things breathe. You know, of like, hey, if you don't care about Brody and Hooper and Quint, then the movie doesn't work. Like, you have you have to have the right actors, but also you have to care about these guys. So you have to develop good characters, and it's the blessing of this movie is that they change the way the characters are in the book, because in the book none of them are really likable at all. It's a lot different.
I'm glad that you brought that up, because this is a fun I don't want to say it's like a gotcha with people, but I love to always cite the book Jaws and the movie Jaws, because a lot of times book purists will be like, oh, the movie butchered the book, or it was a hatchet job, or, you know, the book is so much better. And I'm like, well, Jaws is really the exception to that rule. And, you know, Jaws and maybe The Wizard of Oz, if we're getting down to brass tack. But you said it exactly. The book Jaws, outside of the premise, the shark stalking this seaside community, is really, I don't want to call it a bad book, because it's not like it's poorly written. I mean, you know, it holds your interest, but if that had been the film, I don't think we'd be talking about it today.
No, if it was made so there's two movies that Spielberg did that were based off bestsellers. One is easily the movie is 10, I think, million times better than the book, and that's Jaws. The other one, I think both are great, and I see why he changed what he changed, and that's Jurassic Park. Because, like, the book Jurassic Park, I just don't think they you couldn't have done the movie the way the book was. A, it's too long. Mm-hmm. And B, in 1992, when they're trying to put all these effects together, like, you weren't confident enough that you could do what they would have to. And I think how they changed it worked for the version he's telling. And I'm okay with that, because as long as it's like superhero stuff. As long as it's good, it's okay if it takes from the source material and then changes to fit a movie. I would love to see a Jurassic Park based off the book in a, like, it, you'd have to spend a lot of money on it, but like, if Universal was like, we will throw buku bucks at like a 6-part miniseries where it's exactly like the book, great. Otherwise, like, what Spielberg did is good, but I think, like, what Jaws did was, like, I think what was great is, you know, Spielberg took the premise and then they rewrote the characters to be like, this needs more humor. They need to be more likable. There's too many subplots that you could do in a book and it still doesn't totally work. But, you know, like the stuff with the mob, I think if Hooper and Ellen had the affair like they do in the book, I think this movie would nowhere near, especially the Hooper character, I think, no matter how good Richard Dreyfuss is, it would have been like, ugh, God, that's like just icky. Like, yeah, I don't like that. And
let him die
that, like,
in the cage.
Exactly. And the fact that like Brody and Ellen are actually have a great marriage, I think is great. And like, they're really good together. And I just think the changes they made in like Quint, giving him the motivation of why is he the way he is? Cause in the book, it's just, that's how he is.
Yeah.
There is no Indianapolis thing. And I go, that just brings, I mean, it's one of the greatest monologues of all time is that, especially the way he delivers it, which fun little Netflix nugget is that parts of that take, he is hammered because the first night they tried to shoot it, and Spielberg talks about it where he goes, I shouldn't have let him do it, but he asked me nicely and was like, you know, could I have a drink before? Well, then he got so hammered that they had to like lift him onto the boat. He just started improvising wildly. And then like early in the morning called Spielberg and was like, I'm so embarrassed. I'm so sorry. Please just let me do this again. And he's like, no problem. And then he nails that. But you can kind of tell if you watch the movie and know about that, there's certain looks he does where it's like, he looks like he's been drinking.
Yeah.
Which works because they have been in right. the movie, you know? So, but it's like, yeah. And I mean, Spielberg's 26 and Robert Shaw's asking, can I go have a drink? You're not going to tell him no. You're like, sure, go ahead. Whatever helps you loosen up for the scene.
Well, and that's the thing, you know, Spielberg wasn't Spielberg.
No.
At this point, it's, I mean, it still just blows my mind that he was 26, 27 years old making this movie. I mean, I mean, he is one of the greats, so it kind of all adds up at the end of it. But, I mean, to think what he had riding on his shoulders for this film, I mean, it famously went over budget, it went over schedule. Of course, there's all the stories with the infamous mechanical shark. Mm. I mean, it's nothing short of a miracle that this film was, in fact, made and that it turned out as well as it did. I'm always amazed because Spielberg has said this many times over the years, but I think he's exactly right. 50% of this film's success outright is because of John Williams.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, the score is amazing, and it's so many different themes. There's yeah. there's a theme when it's the moment at the dinner table with Brody and his son, which is a moment that once I got to college, one of my professors. So I went to a film school, well, a liberal arts college, and I studied film there. And one of my teachers, I think it was my sophomore or junior year, huge Jaws fan. He goes, I watch this movie like once a week. So he wanted to show us that scene, though. And he goes, this is the type of scene that a lot of directors, especially young ones, wouldn't think to put in a horror, thriller, you know, man versus beast movie. And it's this great moment of like, they didn't write that in the script. It was Roy Scheider was telling him like, hey, look, he's like, we should do something like this. And they were goofing around and he goes, let's film that. And like, you get this great moment that humanizes Brody, who's already up until that point. You're like, okay, he's a good man who is being put in a really bad spot where if it was up to him, the beaches would be closed, but he knows he can't. And then when Alex Kittner dies and then the mom smacks him and you're just like, ah, and when he has that moment with his son, where the son's kind of like copying him, and then he's like, you know, give us a kiss. And he's like, why? And he's like, because I need it. I can tell you as a father, I've had a lot of moments where you're just like, give me a kiss. Because like, I've had a bad day or it's been a rough few hours. And you just need that like comfort from your child. And then what's great is as soon as Matt Hooper rings the doorbell, he's just like, yeah, get out of here. Like, it's such a good, it is. One of my favorite moments, though, that scene. Oh, I'll just tell you this right now. So actually my favorite line in that movie is at the end of that scene when he's like, you know, let's go cut the shark open. And Ellen's like, can you do that? And he goes, I could do anything. I'm the chief of police. The way he delivers that line as he takes this big gulp of wine, which is in a regular glass, which is always hilarious. It's just one of those like, that's my favorite line because it's the way Scheider delivers it is just so flawless.
He really is the heart and backbone of this movie. And I'm always sort of tickled whenever people say, oh, Brody's really not the protagonist of this movie. I'm like, were you paying attention? Like, yeah. You know, like, I mean, clearly our point of view is with him. He is us. And I think that's, such a relatable situation because even though this is larger than life, you can identify with Brody. You can identify with being the man put in an impossible situation or just in way over your head and trying to solve a problem and relying on your own wits and ingenuity. I mean, I love how Brody is the one that ultimately takes down the shark. It's not the ace fisherman. It's not the marine biologist. It's just the local sheriff. I mean, and again, he's not any expert. He's afraid of the water on top of it. And it's just such a, well-rounded character. And again, I think you have to give it to Roy Scheider. He just brought such life and energy to that character that, particularly, I mean, you know, this is getting ahead of it, but like once you, you know, go beyond Jaws 2, you really feel his absence. He is such an important part to this film and, of course, the second one that when he's not there, you really notice it.
Yeah, and you could tell what's always sad is that the sequel, you could tell his heart wasn't in it, but they're like, you got to be like, we're going to pay you money. You're going to do it. And I know like that movie he hated doing because he's like, this is not. Like, I think the movie's actually not a bad sequel at all.
No.
But I could also see where he's coming from where it's like, yeah, you know, leave it alone. Like, leave the first one alone. But, like, he's so good in the movie. What's so great is, you know, a movie like that or like Rocky where it's something unbelievable, but you believe it because you're invested. Like, if you just look at, okay, the shark blows up because he shoots a tank that's in his mouth. Okay. I remember Spielberg has talked about it where he's like, you know, I don't know if this is going to work. And then someone told him to like, if they're with you to that point in this movie, they are going to love when that happens.
Right.
They're not going to go, wait, that doesn't make any sense. It's like Rocky being a nobody and taking a champ, you know, taking Apollo Creed, the limit in the first Rocky. You're in it because you believe in the characters. Right. You know, it's why characters are so important that because if you don't care about Brody, then that ending doesn't work. And you're like, what? That's crazy. But like, you're in that moment and you're like, yes, get him. Like, come on, hit the damn tank. And then Roy Scheider's reaction is so amazing when he does hit it. And it's just like big joyful laugh. You know, even though they've just been through hell and it's so good, but like, it's just so important that this movie, when you're developing a movie and to me, it starts with the characters,
right?
If you have likable characters, then your movie has a shot.
Yeah.
If the characters aren't likable, then they need to be so good. Like a movie, I think is a good example, not to get off topic, but like Challengers was a really good movie, but about bad people. All three of the leads are not good people or are just people where you're like, eh, but they all did such a good job and the movie's an interesting movie that it's like, okay, it works.
Right.
But that's not always the case. Like if you're going to do a movie about unlikable people, then there needs to be a hook. Whereas I feel like Jaws is, you could identify with a Quint, a Hooper, a Brody, depending on who you are. But it's definitely through Brody's eyes where it's like, he's a tough guy, but on the boat with Hooper and Quint, he is a fish out of water.
Right.
And they look at him like almost like a child at times because they're like, you don't know what the hell you're doing. We respect you as a person, but you're basically useless on this boat. But he's the sheriff and it's his charter. Like he's got to go.
Oh no. I mean, I love how he's the one who shows up with his rubber boots.
Yeah.
The rain slicker on. Like, I mean, it's it goes back to the little details that just sort of make this movie stand out. And again, just endear you to the characters. I mean, it's like even that scene where Quint crushes the can and you've got Hooper with his, you know, plastic cup of coffee.
I was going to say.
Oh, here we go.
Got a little phone near Gansett when we were at the airport. I was like, oh, I got to get one of these.
I have one of those. I've got more Jaws memorabilia than I probably, you know, should be allowed to have at this point.
Yeah. My office has turned into like Guardians, Jaws, Jurassic Park, Indiana Jones. I'm like, yeah, it's a pretty good nerd hang on a lot of Marvel. So in Star Wars.
That's not bad. Not bad at all. Nick, I have to ask, when was the first time you saw Jaws? What was your Jaws story?
So I was probably 6 or 7. And okay. I watched it with my grandfather.
Good age.
Yeah. Yeah. Where I wasn't afraid of it in the sense of like, oh my God, watching it. I loved it as a kid. It made me afraid of water though. And it also, there's two things I remember vividly. It made me afraid of water. And it also made me not want to try tomato soup because when Quint gets bit and spits blood, as a kid, I always thought of that as like, I mean, the first time someone brought me like made tomato soup, I was like, oh, that looks like what Quint spits up. I don't want that. And like, it made me not want to ever try it. But no, I remember vividly watching it with my grandpa and my brother and just being like, well, this movie's awesome. But then not really understanding the parts that make it awesome outside of the shark. And then when I was in high school and started working and like making my own money, it's one of the first DVDs I bought. Like when I really was like, God, I want to be an actor. Like that's what I want to do. I went and bought, it was Jaws, Jurassic Park, Goodfellas, School of Rock, and National Treasure were like the first five DVDs where I was like, I bought those with my own money. It wasn't a gift. It was like, I bought these and I just would watch the special features all the time. So like, seeing it as a kid, it stuck with me. It's one of my best friend's favorite movies too. So like growing up, we love that movie. But like as a teenager was when I really started to be like, wow, okay, this is not just a great monster movie. Like this is a great movie. And then watching, I mean, like I've watched so many hours of interviews and behind the scenes and it almost becomes like an obsession for like a cinephile where it's like, I want to know how the sausage is made. I am not one of those people who's like, don't show me how a movie's made. It'll ruin the man. I'm like, no, it like makes the magic better for me, to be quite honest. I like knowing because this was something I wanted to do with my life. Like that's what I wanted to be. And this was one of those movies where like, it made me a bigger fan of Spielberg. It made me want to seek out like other Roy Scheider movies and Robert Shaw movies. And I mean, what's sad about Robert Shaw is like, he died like, you know, 2 years after this. So like he was only 52 when he died, you know? So it's like, who knows what more he would have done after this. So yeah, it's one of those where it's like a movie for me when I first watched it that just stuck with me all those years. And then every year I've just grown to appreciate it more and more where now it's like, I watch it all the time, you know, even if it's just like, I'm going to throw it on to go to bed. And then I'll end up like still watching it. I'm like, okay, I gotta go to sleep. And right. I'll be like, okay, let me just see one part, then I'll go to sleep.
I can relate to that. Yeah. No, Jaws is one of those films where I feel like I could never get enough of it, particularly the behind the scenes stuff. I mean, I've read Carl Gottlieb's The Jaws Log and all of the behind the scenes books. I mean, I've seen probably every documentary at this point at least 10 times. I mean, just because it's like, it's one of those films where A, it's film history. Like this is a monumental film, but just the strain and the pressure they were under to make this film and all of the ingenuity. I mean, I love that it was sort of on the fly that they came up with the idea of when those two guys are out, you know, with the holiday roast and the, again, you know, the shark isn't working. So they use the dock as a substitute for the shark. And that's just fascinating and terrifying at the same time, because it adds a whole other level to the movie. But it's just sort of interesting how they were able to, okay, the shark isn't working. How are we going to solve this problem?
Oh, for sure. And have you watched the John Williams documentary on Disney Plus?
Yes.
It's just called John Williams. Yeah. So when he talks about when he's explaining to Spielberg, like, this is a pirate movie when they're on the sea. And it's like, yeah, it works. You don't want that, like, you know, like, you don't want a scary theme in that third act. The third act should be, that's the adventure, like, of this movie. And just all of it. One of the best pieces of music, I think, in the scene that, like, to me has now stood out the most of where it's music along with visual is when they're going looking for Ben Gardner's boat. They find it, and there's this shot where they're shining a light and then you see it from the boat's view looking towards theirs, and the music is playing and it almost feels almost alien, like a mystery of like, what the hell? And it's like skimming the top of the boat. And it's just this beautiful shot of like the music works, the performance works, the cinematography. It's like everybody hit a home run on that one particular part. There's not a weak thing of that. And not that there is in the movie anyway, but like, it's just so flawless, but it's like, so it's just one of those examples where maybe a different composer's like, let's try to make it more eerie. And John Williams like, no, this is more of a mystery. You're trying to figure out like what happened here, you know? And it's just so good. I just think him and Spielberg was just that perfect marriage of a guy who could show you what you want to see. And then a guy who could, you know, show you what you want to hear type thing. And they just always mirrored each other perfectly. It's like truly one of, I think, like the all time greatest combos of director composer is Spielberg and John Williams. And obviously so many of his scores have become as iconic as anything.
I mean, again, you can't help but, you know, go to the beach during the summertime and I'll be damned if you don't hear somebody, you know, whistling the tune to Jaws, or like even when you get into the water yourself. I mean, it's in your subconscious. I mean, it's just permeated the zeitgeist, which, I mean, you can't say that about a lot of film scores, particularly 50 plus years later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah, no, I think it's one where it's just the fact that like John Williams has done like that, Star Wars, Raiders, you know,
Jurassic Close Encounters Park.
Jurassic Park, like all these scores that it's just like, man, it's like watching a rookie quarterback take the worst team in the league and win a Super Bowl his rookie year. Like, it's just one of those things where you're like, how did that happen? How did somebody know that these notes make this sound so good? And then a director go, here's how this needs to look. Here's how this movie needs to. And it's just like, it's why even a bad movie, you should still give credit to like, you made a movie. It's so hard to do even when it's done poorly. Now there's obviously difference when like a studio is like, oh, we just need a cash grab. And you're like, okay. You could feel that. But like, like the effort that would go into trying to do Jaws would have been a nightmare. I mean, it was a nightmare, but it's like, they're the example when people go, oh, well, Jaws did it. It's like, yeah, but just cause it worked for Jaws didn't mean it's going to work for a lot of movies. But it's also very common, some of the things they did, which was, oh, we didn't have a finished script, but like we have what we kind of want. Now we're changing things on the fly. That happens a lot.
Oh, I know. I mean, not to derail it, but I always sort of laugh when people are screaming and running around saying, oh, a script isn't finished. And again, I'm not naming any particular movie, but it's just, this is part of the game, you know, like, I mean, movies go into production all the time. I mean, you know, not to evoke, you know, Joker as an example, but also, but like they were famously rewriting the script day by day on that one. So, I mean, it happens all, you know, more than people like to admit. And Jaws is just, yeah, I mean, I guess what it is, when things go badly, people can point and say, oh, look, see, they didn't have a script. But, you know, nobody says a word when the movie turns out in the case of Jaws.
And sometimes it's the blessing in disguise. And that's what it was. Right. The shark not working gave them more time to hammer out the script. I mean, Jesus, they started filming and they hadn't cast Hooper or Quint. Like, like that's 2/3 of your leads were still undecided. And, you know, they wanted to, it's so funny that, not quite the same movie, but Caddyshack went through something similar where Bill Murray wasn't cast originally and they were just going to use a local actor in Florida where they were filming. And they tried this guy who was supposed to be like a local community actor and they're like, oh, he's terrible. And then Harold Ramis knew Bill Murray and was like, hey, could you just come in? We just need like one or two scenes. And then he was so funny that they're like, well, okay, let's write him into more of it. You know, and that's another movie that like, again, like a classic movie of its time where they changed a ton of what they had written, and they were changing that constantly because they're like, we need more Rodney Dangerfield. Right. We need more Chevy Chase. Like, these were all supposed to be supporting. It's all supposed to be about Danny the caddy, and instead
it's about everybody else.
It becomes more about everybody else, and he gets like his moments to shine, but it's really about the supporting cast, right? Because you just had such talented people, and it's like that happens in movies where you go in with an idea, something else works, and you're like, yeah, let's do that instead.
No, but that's all part of the filmmaking process, which, you know, again, some people say, oh, I don't want to know how the sausage is made. But I mean, that to me, I think that that's part of the whole deal. Like, I'm always fascinated by that stuff. I look at this film, you know, what, 50 years now, and I think to myself, why does it work so well? And I don't know if there is one definitive answer, because you really could point to a number of things: score, acting, the story, production value. But I think what is the glue, and this kind of gets back to that earlier point about the about sort of the imitators, the other shark films, it really is a testament to the shark, to Bruce. I think that we are still holding this film up with such reverence. Again, with the advancements in technology today, the digital effects, none of them hold a candle to the shark in this film. I feel very comfortable saying that I will die in that hill. I don't care how much money you have, how good the animatronics look. The shark in Jaws is more threatening, more realistic than anything else that is out there today. And I will die on that hill.
Yeah. I think it's part of why it worked. Well, again, similar to Jaws, is what makes Jurassic Park, the first one, work so well, is when you're using that animatronic T-Rex and it's right in front of them. You're like, that's terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
There's something with CGI that, even when it's good,
you know,
a movie like Jaws just doesn't work. In a superhero movie, it's different. Like, for instance, Thanos. Clearly, he had to be CGI, but it works.
You believe it.
Good actor. Yep. You can believe it. You're like, oh, he's terrifying. Like, that's a good villain. But I feel like for this in particular, it's like, it just wouldn't work, you know, if it was a CGI shark or like a claymation, you know. And I think it's as much as people love claymation, and, you know, I'm a fan of it, but like, I'm glad they didn't do it in Jurassic Park. Like, that was going to be originally what they're going to do instead of the CGI. They were going to do it all claymation. Right. And I think like a movie like Terminator did the same thing, where they used it, and it ages that part poorly. I think, you know, when he's walking in the hall and you're like, oh, it looks then very campy, and you could tell. And like, it went from a scary thought of like, because Schwarzenegger's this big guy and he's supposed to be this big robot, to like, okay, that part, you know, you kind of are like, yeah, all right. Still creepy, but not quite the same. And I think
you cringe a little.
Yeah, you cringe a little at that. But I think like Jaws, again, it's, you know, if they had the technology back then, they would have tried it. But there's something special about like that, Star Wars, Back to the Future with the practical effects, that you're just like, again, if you need to use CGI, I'm not totally against it, because it's just hard sometimes. Some stuff you just can't do
practically. Oh, sure.
You could try, and it's going to – like, now, I know you can't wait for this movie. I can't wait to see what Christopher Nolan does with The Odyssey, since he's going all practical, and the sets are freaking crazy. All I hear from the actors in it, they're like, these sets are massive, and it is going to be nuts. I'm like, God, I cannot wait.
In Nolan, we trust.
Exactly. He's like, I think, this generation Spielberg. And we're kind of lucky enough as two guys old enough to have seen like all of Spielberg's filmography, that now we get someone like Nolan, and it's like, this is awesome. That's like spoiled now that we've gotten directors like that.
Oh, no. I mean, they don't come around that often.
No. But yeah, I think you're right, though. I think there's something about the shark. I just think it's a movie that is also, I think other movies, the imitators struggle with comedy. I think this movie has a lot of good jokes in it, but it's not hit you over the head and try to be a fun. It's part of life. Part of life is still funny. Like,
exactly. There's no gags in this.
No.
Everything arises from the situation. It's, you said it, it's day-to-day life. And I think that's something that is endearing, because the last thing you want in a thriller or some kind of a suspense film is too much. You know, you don't want to be beaten over the head with nonstop violence or what have you. You want that little balance. And Jaws is great for bringing out the, of course, the suspense and the tension, but then there's a laugh. And again, it's not like, oh, ha ha, you know, it's, you know, lose your, you know, thought and forget what's going on. But it's just sort of alleviates the tension in a way.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And I think there's great moments, like when Ellen's kind of like scolding Brody about, like, oh, he's, you know, when Brody gets mad that Michael's in the boat, and she's like, he's not in the boat. He's in, or he's not in the ocean. He's in the boat and the dock, and he's going to be terrified. And, you know, Brody's like, ah, you're right. You know, I just want him to learn the regulations. And then she's looking at the book and sees the shark, the picture of the shark, you know, the cartoon of like him, the shark ripping apart the boat. And then she's like, Michael, get out of the boat now. You heard your father. And Roy Scheider shoots her this look like, oh, okay. And like, that's funny. Like, that part's funny. I think there's stuff with Hooper that's funny, you know, and there's parts even with Quint that's funny. Like, they're not like these sight gags, you know. It's and there are parts, like a really great joke is when he's doing the knot and then he goes, hey, I got it. And then the line takes off, you know, and you're like, oh, great. You know, and they build all the tension of Quint noticing the line that it's been bobbing. And he's like strapping himself in, and Brody's doing the eel swims out of the hole, back in the cave, back out. And then he's just like, hey, I got it. And then boom, it takes off. And it's like, that's great. There's just, I think I know, like Carl Gottlieb, when he wrote it, he had said, like Spielberg said, hey, we need to make this, there needs to be more humor in this. There's not enough humor in it. I think that was important. I think, again, Goodfellas, one of my other all time favorite movies, is a funny movie. And these are not good people, but like, there are jokes in that movie that work and land, and you need that. I just think Scorsese, a lot of his movies are like that, where there's funny parts in The Departed, in this, or in Goodfellas. Obviously, Wolf of Wall Street's like way more of like a dark comedy because of the subject matter. But like, I think Spielberg does a good job in movies. There's parts in Saving Private Ryan where just they're having conversations that are funny. And again, it like humanizes these characters.
No, and again, that goes a long way with us as an audience, where we can then be invested in their journey. Like, again, if we don't care about the characters, like you said, the rest of it is for nothing. I always ask this question, and I'd love to get people's responses, because there is a lot of opinion when it comes to Jaws. Is this a horror movie or not?
I think you could qualify it as a horror movie, but it's more than that. To me, Jaws is a, it could fit a lot of buckets.
Right.
It's not just one. So like one of my other favorite, the two of my favorite, like, I guess one of them is a straight horror movie. And then one of them, I think you could count as similar to Jaws. It's kind of like multi-genre, all from the '70s, is Alien and the first Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Like the first Halloween's a straight horror movie. I feel like Alien, that's like a sci-fi horror.
Yeah.
Because you're in space. These are just regular people. And I think Jaws, while it is a horror movie, I just think it's so much more. And again, it's why a movie also like Alien works, is I just think, you know, it's just made different. This isn't like the first, you know, Jason movie. Like the first Friday the 13th is like almost like a B movie. Like it's poorly shot. It's just a slasher movie of like, you don't give a crap about anybody in it. You're just, these are body counts that you're just like, or, you know, meat puppets where you're like, yep, just kill them. That's what they're there for. Jaws is like, this is like just real people getting attacked by a shark.
Right.
And I think it is, like I said, you could qualify it as a horror movie. But I think it's also, it's an adventure, it's a drama, like it's just everything. I feel like you could classify it in so many ways, but yes, it should be in the horror category for sure. But I think it's more than just, and there's great horror. So I'm not trying to knock horror, cause I think there's like Sinners to me is,
you know,
part of like what would be considered elevated horror. And I think that movie could win an Oscar this year. I think that movie's great. I think I'm excited to see Weapons. I hear that movie, like, I know it's your favorite of the year, and it's like that's one that, again, it's more of a horror thriller kind of, you know, suspense ish like there's, it's multiple. I feel like the horror genre is so multi-layered that
right
there's good horror, and then there's just movies like the Terrifier movies where it's like that's like the blood porn movies where you're like okay, they're the, you know, the horror porn where you're like, those are just meant to watch people get murdered viciously.
Right.
This is not a movie meant for that.
No. Jaws is definitely not horror porn, to say the least. No, I like that take because it really is a film that transcends the genres in a lot of ways. I think that's why it reaches so many different groups of people, because it's not, there's a little bit of something for everybody. And, you know, again, if you're going to have a film that has mass appeal, yeah, there's got to be a little bit of something for everybody. You've got adventure, you've got thriller, you've got the horror elements, you've got a, you know, a quasi pirate movie. I mean, there's really a little bit of each particular genre and subgenre sewn into this movie.
Oh, for sure. Well, and I think a movie like, you'd look at like the Terminator. That's kind of a horror movie, really. Yeah. Like that's the first one. The second one's way more of an action, but like there's some scenes are scary in Terminator. I mean, the first Sarah Connor where he goes to visit her just blows her to pieces and you're like, "Oh man, that's brutal." Like he is a brutal killing machine, and it's like that's what a horror movie is. That's someone is a killing machine, you know.
Right.
And I just think that, like I said, the genre has gone through so many changes of like Hitchcock horror. And then in the 70s, you started to get more into the slasher, and then especially in the 80s. And then I feel like now we're in this kind of golden age of like, oh man, some of the elevated horror, which sometimes people sound like, oh, you're sounding almost sounding like pretentious doing that. But it's like, no, it's great. Like it just gives you different. And then like comedies, dramas, there shouldn't be just, oh, it fits in one bucket. You should be like, well, you know, Naked Gun, hilarious. Spoof movie comedies are in a different bucket than like a Wedding Crashers or a 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Right.
Those are different types of comedies, but you need them. And I feel like horror is the same, as you could have something like this, but I don't know many horror movies where you actually care about the characters to this extent.
Right.
Especially early on in the genre, you know, especially in the 70s when you were getting, you know, you care about Laurie Strode in Halloween, but it's not like her friends are like characters that you really get to know more than what you do in the movie.
Right.
But it works because Michael Myers is such a good villain and it's so well shot. And the music, again, simple score, Jaws and Halloween, basically two notes, and it scares the shit out of everyone, you know? So I think it's just one of those where I've always considered it where I'm like, if you want to put it in the horror category, totally fine. If you want to put it in the adventure, I just go, Jaws is like its own genre. There's just not many movies like it that could fit in that many buckets.
Yeah. And you made a good point. It is in the tradition of a B movie, but it is so elevated. Like you could imagine if Jaws had been made 20 years earlier, it would have been something cheesy and tacky and over the top, and probably something we would never, you know, think about, or you'd find it on some like Mystery Science Theater or something, you know. Whereas here they took those elements that we would associate with a monster movie and instead, okay, kept them, but raised the bar. And again, I think that's where the characterization comes in. You had in quality cinematography, top-notch direction. Like, this wasn't just a let's get it done and you know, put it in the can, so to speak.
Yeah, well, and I think I think Jaws 2 is kind of what Jaws would have been under a different director and a different cast. Like, yeah, that's more of a traditional horror movie. There's the body count. There's
right. Nameless victims.
Nameless victims and stuff. What I think, and I think that's what Jaws does a good job of avoiding. But no, I just think, man, you just had a lot of right at the right time. You had, yeah, like the right cast, even though the stories of like Robert Shaw and Richard Dreyfuss.
Oh, legendary.
Yeah. Are like legendary of like, especially, but it's also like, you know, a guy like Robert Shaw was one of those actors who's like, if, you know, and Dreyfuss was one where Dreyfuss maybe had too big an ego at the time, even though I know he said like, I thought I was a terrible actor going into Jaws, so like I need this job. And Robert Shaw was just that like old school, like young kids today type thing, just like his character is, you know. Right. So it's just great. It's just such a great dynamic because Brody is such the middleman of like, he's older than Hooper, younger than Quint. He's a freaking sheriff. Like, you know, this guy's a cop. He was a cop in New York City. Yeah. And he's just like, yeah, put me on the streets with these guys and I'm the one who people would follow. But like, and I got to go on the boat with them. And they're two guys who are similar because they're both so stubborn.
Right.
But what the way they go about it is just a lot different. You know, it's almost like, it's like a political party, you know, it's like the Matt Hooper party and the Quint party. And it's like, they both want the same thing, but they both go about it totally different, you know? And then you have like Brody right in the middle where it's like, yeah, he's like, I get where you're coming from and I get where you're coming from. I don't think you guys are working together though. And then like, you know, so yeah, it's just,
follow Brody.
It's just such a flawless. Yeah, exactly. It's just such a flawless movie. It's so good.
No, it is. Like I said, I never can find a nit to pick with this film. Like, yeah, it really is just perfect from beginning to end. I mean, and it hooks you in right from that very start. The opening of Jaws is still one of the most frightening scenes in movie history. I mean, just the fact that we don't see the shark and it's all just, again, theater of the mind of what's going on underneath the ocean or underneath the surface.
Yeah. And that's probably the most traditional horror of, yeah, like that, of that movie is the opening. Cause you know, it's a bunch of teens at a bonfire or, right, you know, early 20s, you, yeah, know, she's probably like 20, 21. Cause he says he's in college, you know, the guy. So you're assuming you're like, okay, they're all a bunch of college kids. And it just starts so innocent of like, it's almost morning. They've been out all night drinking and smoking. And it's like, she's, you know, the guy's so drunk trying to, you know, which is really funny. There's a lot of really funny lines that he does. But, like, she's just swimming, trying to enjoy being young and beautiful and then gets killed mercilessly. Yeah. Like, just – and there's such a scary thing she says where she's just like, you know, I don't want to die. God, please help me. And you're like, God, that's terrifying. Like, that's awful because I'm wondering – anyone who's ever been killed by anything probably is thinking something like that. Like, you know, and you don't see it, which is what's great, is she's just getting dragged and you're like, what is going on?
Oh no. I mean, I can remember the first time I saw it. I mean, it was one of those scenes where it just stays imprinted in your mind where what's going on underneath is even more terrifying than what you're seeing right in front of you. I mean, again, it's just powerful images that, I mean, again, it stays with you all these years later.
I mean, that's part of what works in the first Alien movie. It's like sometimes what you don't see is scarier than what you do. And
right,
I think same thing with Halloween. Like, again, I think a lot of these filmmakers who were brought up in the 70s and 60s and stuff where it's like you didn't have the same things you have today. So part of it is I think you have to – let the audience imagine what's going on. You're still going to show them stuff, but sometimes what you can't see, it's like walking in the dark.
Right.
Your thought of what could be walking in the same room as you is scarier than what you're actually doing.
Right.
you know, and I think they do a great job of like, it's a mind F of a thing where you're just like, oh God, now every time someone's in the water, you're like, when's the shark coming? When is it coming? Oh, it didn't come yet. Okay. And then, you know, like you start picking up on the music cues where you're like, oh, there's no music cue. So the shark must not be there.
Yeah. No, you know, and then there's that scene where the shark does pop up without the music, mm-hmm. which is, again, yeah. that's another, you know, hat tip to John Williams and his brilliance. I mean, it's a movie where I have to imagine we're going to be talking about it, you know, 50 plus years from now. I mean, it's a movie I think that's going to be in the same pantheon of classic films. I mean, you think of Casablanca, Citizen Kane, Lawrence of Arabia. I mean, these towering giants of cinema that just stands the test of time. I have to ask, because I mean, this is one where I'm always, you know, ask me today and I'll tell you one answer, ask me tomorrow, I'll probably give you another. What is your favorite scene in this movie?
So I do think it is the whole dinner scene or table scene with, starting with Brody and his son Sean doing the hand, you know, mimicking each other, then Hooper coming in, Hooper just being like, is anyone eating this? Like just grabbing a plate. And then there's just all these great moments when it's like, oh, you know, he's like, oh, you might want to let the wine breathe a little. Okay, never mind. You know, and like, and then again, and then it ends with that great, you know, of the, I could do anything. You know, I could do anything. I'm the chief of police. Like, it's just so great. And then obviously I think you pick almost any scene in the third act when they go out on the water, even just like when they first are loading the boat, you know, and it's, you know, Quint razzing Brody about like, oh, I see you got your rubbers on. Like, it's so funny. And it's just like that you could almost pick any scene from this movie and it's a good scene.
Oh, I know.
Like, it's just, it's hard. I would say though, if you had like, again, like gun to the head, the favorite one is probably that kitchen scene. I think that's just the one that, because there's just such beautiful small moments and then great characterization of Brody and Hooper.
Yeah, it's such a great scene.
Yeah. What about you? Do you have a favorite?
You know, it really does change almost day to day because, again, there's just so much to pick from in this movie. I really love the scene where Brody first sees the shark and just his reaction, because, you know, you've got him, you know, he's out there chumming. And, of course, you know, you come down here and chum some of this shit and the shark pops up. So, his reaction, like, I mean, it's a laugh that turns into a holy shit moment.
Yeah.
And then I love that whole sequence that plays out afterwards where, you know, Brody's like, okay, we got to get a bigger boat out here. And like, everyone's ignoring him. And everybody's like, Quint's getting the gun ready. Hooper's doing his thing. And then you've got, of course, the music. And like, you can't help but be excited and also a little on edge at the same time.
Two actors who do great smoking acting, Roy Scheider and Dan Aykroyd with cigarettes in their mouth. I always think of Ghostbusters when Dan Aykroyd, the cigarette hangs out of his mouth when he first sees Slimer and when he's working on the car and Roy Scheider doing with the cigarette in his mouth. And I'm not a smoker and like smoking's very bad for you, but Roy Scheider makes it look so cool in that movie. Where he just goes, yeah, why don't you come some of this shit? Like, it's so good.
I know.
And the cigarette's just still hanging kind of out of his mouth when he's like, oh my God. Like, you know, he doesn't have time to just like take a cigarette out. Like, holy crap. It's just,
completely shell shocked.
Like, he does this head whip that's so good and so iconic. And Roy Scheider just truly like one of the most gems of an actor and had like a run in the 70s that doesn't get talked about enough.
French Connection, all that jazz.
One of my favorite performances of anybody is his part in All That Jazz. He's so good in it. Should have won an Oscar for it.
I would agree with you for that. Yeah. I agree with you with that.
I mean, I don't know who won that year, but should have been Roy Scheider.
No, honestly, I mean, frankly, I am still amazed to this day that none of them were nominated for an acting. I mean, in this film, I mean, I suppose it would be tough to narrow it down, you know, if they didn't want to do all three. But, I mean, at least one of them, I think, should have garnered a nomination.
Sure Robert Shaw should have gotten Best Supporting, because Quint, to me – but this is why the Oscars always don't matter for longevity of a movie right. or characters. To me, Quint is one of the all-time greatest supporting characters.
Oh, in a God, movie yeah.
ever. You know, like, it's him and Joe Pesci and, like, Goodfellas. Not to bring it back to that movie, but, like, those are two performances where it's, like, those guys, those are, like, to me, the most iconic. Like, two of the most iconic. Like, Christopher Lloyd is Doc Brown. There's just roles where you go, that role transcends anything that could have won Best Actor or Movie that year. You know, it's like right. those are, I think Alec Guinness as, you know, Obi-Wan oh, Kenobi yeah. is yeah. another one where it's like that. I just like, and I know he was nominated for that, but like there's just roles where you're like, that becomes bigger than anything else.
They transcend and the movie.
Yeah, they do. And I think any of the three, but I definitely think for sure, at least for supporting, I'm always surprised that Robert Shaw didn't get nominated for that. I'm like, God, that's insanity.
Well, no, it's funny because, you know, before, like, you know, the internet and you could look all this stuff up, you know, was a thing. I remember somebody in passing, this was like in elementary school, said, oh, yeah, he was nominated for Jaws. So, like, I mean, I went for like 2 or 3 years thinking, oh, well, yeah, he was nominated for an Oscar, like telling everybody. And then, you know, finally one day I was, you know, must have been looking it up on a Wikipedia page and it was like, oh, wait, okay, no, he wasn't. Okay, I was lied to here.
Like, I'm just writing this false like, almost like a Mandela effect of serious? Like, oh, that's, yeah, he was nominated and telling all these people. And then they tell someone and they're like, no, he wasn't.
Yeah. No, I mean, I did, you know, the Brody head whip, you know, with that reaction. But yeah no, it's, I mean, you are right. I mean, it some roles, some performances transcend, Oscar talk and become part of the zeitgeist. I mean, Quint is definitely one of those people. I mean, as is the same with Brody and Hooper. I mean, they're all memorable in their own right, as is like a character like Larry. I mean,
mm-hmm. oh, yeah, Larry
I, you know, I grow up, I have, you know, lived in a small town most of my life. And so, you know, small town politics and people like Larry Vaughn are folks that I have dealt with in different capacities. So
there's not a lot of game too, like his Blazers.
Oh,
nothing beats a Larry Vaughn, you know,
top notch. So, oh yeah.
Yeah. I want that jacket so bad.
I me too. Like, yeah. Oh, the anchor jacket. Yeah. I get my hand, you know, that's a prop I'd like to have yeah. right there. There's another scene, which I, to this day, it's still imprinted in my memory. The scene in the pond where the guy gets mm-hmm. attacked, and it's actually technically the first time we see the shark. It's not it, like the Brody
it looks
scene.
Amazing
that
it
scene
is,
to this day. Like, I mean, I'm convinced that is a great white. Like, it just yeah. the way it looks, the water, the lighting, it's perfect.
It's so good. Yeah, that when you just see it coming up from like underneath that guy, kind of, and you're like, oh, he's effed. He's yep. so screwed. You're like, oh. Like, sorry, buddy, that's you're the nameless victim here, bud.
Right.
And it's just so terrible because he's just trying to help them. And it's like, if all those boats weren't where they were, does the shark not try to go in the pond? And what's great is it leads to that great moment of like when the shark goes past Michael and he's right. just looking terrified. And then, you know, there was like a deleted scene they wanted to do where it was going to be the shark kind of trying to go after Michael, and the guy grabs Michael and then kind of like lets him go as the shark's taking him under so Michael could swim to safety.
Right.
And they ended up cutting it because they're like, ah, it's very bloody and we're not trying to
do that.
And I'm like, I'm kind of glad they left it the way it was because it's better to see him just so in shock knowing that he could have easily have just been the victim there.
Right. Yeah. Jaws is one of those films where I have seen all of the deleted scenes that they've ever, you know, put out. And, you know, sometimes you see a deleted scene for a film, you're like, oh, I wish they would have kept that. That would have been a cool enhancement. The deleted scenes are great gems for this movie, but there isn't one that I would say, oh, they should have kept that in there. Like, everything in this movie works. Mm-hmm. Everything is just the right amount. Each scene builds and then pays off and then goes to the next. It's such a tight film. there's not one moment where I would think like, oh, they should have had this there or should have taken this out and put something else in.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, no, I think this is one of those good examples of like, nah, you didn't need anything else. Like, I don't think there was, I also, what I like about it is the third act doesn't become about, you never see like Ellen and the boys waiting for like to hear back from their dad. I think right. It was important to like, no, this third act is these three. And very few blockbusters would do something like that. They'd want to be like, we need to show
the wife and kids,
her and the kids are going through. And it's like, it's not about them.
Right.
You know, and that's okay because it's about Brody and about Cooper and Quint on the boat killing the shark. It's not about what anyone else thinks back on the island. They don't cut back to Larry Vaughn. Everyone will eventually know what they did because they have to, they're going to paddle back to shore, but it's not about like a hero's welcome or anything. No. It's, and that's why I think it's such a perfect movie is you don't, sometimes movies will use stuff where it's like, I don't need that point of view from that actor or that character. It's fine.
Right.
We get it. Like, we don't need it. And I think that this movie doesn't have fat. There's no fat on it that needs to be trimmed off. You're like, no, leave it. It's great. Right.
No, I mean, that's something that always bothered me with the novel. And I remember the first time I read it being shocked that they don't stay out at sea the entire time. They go back and forth like two or three different times. And I'm like, wow, what a great way to kill the tension. Like, oh, you know, they're out there with the shark and then, oh, we're going to turn in for the night. Like, you know, way to kill your moment.
I know, God, to be like, could you imagine that if they were like, all right, back to shore now after the first night, you're like, wait, what?
it's anticlimactic. No, that was the best decision, I think, I mean, among many, but that one really stands out just to streamline it into, you know, them being on the boat the entire time. Again, it's a perfect way for tension.
Oh, for sure, man. No, it's just so good. There's just, no, like I said, this is truly one of those movies that I don't think anything else would have made it better. And like,
it's a no-note.
If anything,
movie.
Yeah, exactly. It's a no. If anything, the note is like, you could have made it even longer. But you don't, but like, that's there. It's truly, it is a masterpiece and like a master class of filmmaking that,
right.
Again, the fact that Spielberg did this at 26 is crazy. I don't know how the hell he did this.
No, I mean, once in a generation filmmaker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, he truly is.
What does Jaws mean to you on this anniversary? I know you're a big fan of this film. Yeah. I mean, if you could put it into words, a phrase.
Yeah, I think it's what it means to me is it's a movie that made me fall in love with movies. Mm-hmm. And I think this is part of like that group of movies for me that are my favorites, where when you watch it, you feel like when they do it in the movies, when someone's watching something on the big screen and they're like, you know, the lights and everything in their world is just, you're like so sucked up into that world. And this was one of those first movies that kind of hooked me into like, oh man, this is what I want to do. I want to watch these. And for me, what's so great, it's almost like what it means to me is more of what I see it means to everybody else. It means a lot to me that this movie has the following it does, that it's, I don't think there's a bad discourse of Jaws fans online, because some franchises and some movies do that. And all these people at Martha's Vineyard, I think like that's the stuff that means as much to me as the movie itself, is seeing how much it's affected so many people in like this positive way. And it's a movie that like my kids are too young. They have watched it, but they don't understand it. But it is a movie like when they're older, I can't wait to sit with them and be like, this is a movie that is one of your daddy's favorites. And like, I can't wait to share that with you. But like, they love, like, they know Jaws. I have shirts for them that have the shark on it. And like, you know, like they'll be like, oh, daddy loves Jaws. Like they know my phone case. Like they're like, oh yeah, no, that's, they know that, you know? But it's also, it's just like a movie that it is hard to explain, but it's like that for people who love music, people who love art, where it's just like, you see it, and it just never leaves your brain. and then it becomes something you, oh, it's like an obsession, like a healthy obsession though, you know, and it's to me, it's just something where I think it's one of the few, you know, movies that I don't care what part it's at, when I would want, like, if I want to watch it, I'll watch it. Even if it's just to listen to while I'm doing other things. And then it's like, okay, it's one I can never get sick of. And I truly just can't wait to like share it with, like I said, share it with my boys and just watch it keep growing with generations. Cause I mean, Jesus, this movie's 50 years old and there's probably teenagers now watching it who love it. And then like, you know, and I'm sure there's some who do and don't because it's just a different time. You know, it's a different, it's not a movie that's about the action.
Right.
But it just, to me, what's the most endearing thing is to see how much other people have been affected by this movie in a positive way.
Well said. Certainly you can see its legacy 50 years later in the way movies are made, the way movies are marketed. I mean, as I said at the beginning, this is the first summer blockbuster. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's sort of, it started it all. I mean, Star Wars kicked it off, you know, tenfold 2 years later, but Jaws is the one that really began this summer tentpole movie, which we're still seeing and experiencing today. It's a movie that I think we will continue to talk about because, number one, we all have some experience with the water, whether we live near the beach or not. That's a relatable interaction. Again, whether it's going into a pool, you know, going in the water, like you can't help but have a conversation about Jaws around the water. And so I think that's going to be part of the discussion and conversation for years to come. It continues to inspire filmmakers, up and coming filmmakers. You hear people always mention Jaws as a point of reference. I think that's another part of its legacy. I'll just say for me personally, I grew up watching this movie a lot in my house. My mom was instrumental in bringing Jaws into my life. And I mean, she is a diehard Jaws fan to the end. It's her favorite movie of all time. And you know, every time there's like a Jaws knickknack or something, I'm always picking it up and getting it for her. And I mean, she just, you know, goes crazy for this stuff. She loves the movie so much. So it's very personal for me, just from the whole family connection.
I was gonna say your Mama Walsh, she's got good taste, man. That's a
no,
good,
she does. She you know, she raised me right when it comes to movies. And the other thing, it's a line at the end of the movie where after, you know, they've killed the shark and they're starting to swim home, and Brody says it's like, I think it's the penultimate line. I used to hate the water. And, you know, it's a great character moment because, you know, he's overcome his fear of water. But, like, I've always taken it as it really can mean so much more. Like, you can overcome any challenge, any obstacle, any problem you find yourself in. And even if you're in over your head like Brody, you know, you can defeat it. You can prevail. And I just think that's a... Like, again, that's why I love movies so much. That's why I'm doing this stuff. Like, you know, just it's not just, oh, it's great entertainment. Like, you can really connect with this stuff on an emotional level and a personal level, and kind of see it in your own life in a way. And that to me is, you know, if a movie can do that, then I mean, it's done its job.
Exactly. Yeah. And ultimately, that's a movie's job. Is to just connect on a level with someone. And the best thing a movie could do is bring people together. And like, Jaws, I've made now, including you, you know, a handful of new friends that I've met through social media because of a movie like this.
Yeah.
And that's important. You know, I know I saw a thing where they were like, social media friends aren't real friends. I'm like, that's crap. That's because it basically, if you become friends with someone on social media, it's like you have a long distance friend where you're like, hey, like the fact that I got to meet Sarah and MJ was awesome. Yeah. You know, Sarah lives in England. MJ's up on the West Coast. And it was like, man, if we ever get to meet, this is so cool. And, you know, and I became friends with them because of Jaws, like their, right. because of their Jaws podcast. And it's like, I cherish those. That's important. You know, it's fun to have people because not all my friends like movies the way I do. And it doesn't mean that they're still not my friends. It's like, it's just nice to have a community where you're like, I know if I wanted to text you and was like, hey, Phil, did you check out this movie? It's awesome. Or like, hey, what'd you think of this? You know, let's chat about it. Like,
right.
that's good. I think that's like everyone needs, you know, friends like that. And I think what's great is this movie, you know, could bring you together with people. I think it's great that you got to share it with your mom and your parents and your family. And that's what I hope to do with my kids. Cause my parents didn't really watch this movie. So it definitely was more of like me just falling in love with it myself. Right. And I probably like my kid brother was the one who I got into it the most of like any of my siblings.
Sure.
But it's like, and you know, and one day I'll get to sit with my kids and like really sit and let them watch it. And if they love it, great. And if not, it's like, okay, but at least I got to do that with you guys.
Right.
And it's like, you better, I'm going to take your toys away.
Well, know? I was going to say, you know, disown them or, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, and all your stuff's gone now.
That's right. That's right. No more toys for you.
No more toys for you guys. You should have loved the movie just like me.
That's right. Sink or swim. No. Yeah. No, that's really well said, Nick. And I think that's a perfect place to end this because you said it so eloquently right there. So I tip my hat to you. Nick, thank you. This was just what I wanted for this discussion because, I mean, yeah, you could do a scene-by-scene analysis, but to me, Jaws, like, it just sort of ignites this kind of a passionate discussion where it can just take on so many different levels and layers.
Yeah, it's why I always tip my hat to Sarah and MJ, how I'm like their discipline of staying minute by minute, because I go, God, was that hard? Because you just want to talk about the movie. And but yeah, this is one that when you were like, hey, we're going to talk about Jaws, I'm like, dude, we could talk 17 hours of Jaws. So I'm like, you don't even have to prep me with any questions. Right. I'm like, you can ask me on the spot. I got you, man. So yeah.
Oh no, seriously. I mean, we could have done, you know, just 5 hours on the opening scene or the scene with the holiday roast.
Literally, so
I mean, there's just a lot to unpack with that. So, you know, bookmark that. We'll maybe circle back next summer for something else. But Nick, where can people, as I often say, stalk you in the best possible way on social media?
Yes. Twitter, Blue Sky, Instagram, at Nick Flix Pod. It's on Apple and Spotify. You know, I'm dropping our episode the Monday the 8th. So I'm looking forward to that. We kind of had a nice little discussion about box office, movie reviews. I like to call our episode kind of like a gumbo of just movie stuff. We didn't have like a specific through line. But yeah, no, if you guys want to come chat, about movies. I did do a Jaws 50th episode, which I was very proud of, and it did very well. It's kind of like a bunch of my former guests sent in, you know, 10, 15 minute audio clips of why they love the movie. I also read people's tweets. I think I read one of yours. I don't remember if we were talking, maybe, I can't remember. It was a while ago that I recorded, but I dropped it the week of, and it ended up doing very well. So it was like one of those episodes, man. I was really proud of how it turned out. But yeah, man, just hit me up on social media. If you want to talk about movies, I'm always down.
No. And again, I give it my seal of approval. And I mean, not just because I was on the show, that's, you know, put the bias aside there. No, you really do. You've got a great show and I love hearing your takes on movies and you really put out, I don't like to use the word context.
I appreciate it though.
Yeah, you put out good Nick Flix. How's that?
Good Nick Flix. Yeah, that'll work.
That's better. And of course, everybody, again, thanks to Nick, and please do follow his show. As well as, send him your Jaws questions. I'm sure he, you know, again, Nick is always looking to talk about Jaws. So,
oh, yeah.
Definitely a lot of discussion there to be had. But that does it for me, everybody. Thank you, as always, for tuning in or watching this episode. I will be back next week where we will do this all over again for the love of movies. Makes every